I can't believe
Mikey.
I'm on the line with Ray Hudson. This is so exciting. This is huge for the pod.
Listen, let me jump in here. Let me interrupt you in a very rude way, because you guys at Managing Madrid give me the framework of a game every week, week in, week out, on what the bare bones of the game is coming about. And I want to thank you and all the lads at Managing Madrid for what you do, your dedication, your professionalism, your insight, your knowledge, all of those things, and least of all, your passion.
This is the Managing Madrid podcast.
Zanito again at the point of that midfield triangle. Ronaldo under the keeper, and Sinigu upended. Ronaldo on the board, Real in front.
Oh, it's an absolute howler, this, from Salvatore Sirigu.
Right at his feet.
Such a narrow angle. All he does is blast it towards the Italian goalkeeper and just takes a touch under his feet, but one that you fully expect the goalkeeper to be able to parry.
Osasuna actually with more shots today, twice as many as Real Madrid. Mateo, they might get another here. Flag stays down. Navas comes out. Oh. Chipped up and in by Sergio Leon. We're tied at one. The fast break and the deft finish, his seventh of the season. Clerc lunges, bounces into Benzema. Here comes Isco! Johnny on the spot. Real Madrid capitalizes after the defensive miscue, and they are back in front.
So accurate, this chance from Isco, who makes that late arriving run. Once again, from a narrow angle, Real Madrid able to score past Sirigu. But this one, you can't blame the goalkeeper nearly as much. It was struck to perfection.
Marcelo gets there before Oyer can. In for Ronaldo, lets it run. Vasquez in the box, chips it over Sinigu, and there's the cherry on top. 3-1 Real Madrid. The Merengues, who made the trip, are happy. And the Osasuna fans think what might have been.
Hello and welcome to the Managing Madrid podcast, our first in a while. This is your host, Gabe Lezra. I am on the mic here, and I am joined not by Kian Zabani, as usual. However, we're being joined by our tactics guru, my man, Om Arvind. Om, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Great to have you on the show, buddy. We're going to need to chat a lot of stuff to talk about today. And making his podcast debut, longtime friend of the show. You've heard his name before because we've answered his questions. Andra Paul, welcome to the show. Welcome to Managing Madrid. How's it going?
Oh, fine. Thanks for having me, Gabe.
Dude, of course. So, Andra, you've just joined Managing Madrid as a contributor. How are you enjoying the site?
Oh, I've been a long-time follower, so yeah, it's great to be part of it.
Well, that's wonderful, man. So tell me a little about yourself before we jump in, Paul. Are you from Czech Republic? I see on your Skype thing. That's for you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm from Czech Republic. I've been a long-time Madrid follower, and my area of focus is especially the youth academy, juvenil, and Castilla team, so...
That's
if
wonderful.
You don't know anything about it, just hit me with questions.
We'll have to get you on our show that Kian does from time to time with Sam, who is our other Castilla person. But welcome to the show. Lots to talk about today, guys. I think the main thing, Madrid picking up the 3 points in a rather unconvincing, I guess as unconvincing as a 3-1 win can be, 3-1 against Osasuna. Goal scorers in the game, we've got some from Cristiano Ronaldo after a pass from Benzema. We've got Isco, and then we've got Lucas Vazquez with a brilliantly cheeky little chip. I'm interested a little bit in diving into this. So what happened to make the first half of the match so unconvincing for Madrid? Do you think this was something to do with the 3-5-2? Was it the team was a little bit rusty? What's your diagnosis here?
I guess it's a little bit of, you know, everything you said. Definitely, I think rust played a role because Real Madrid never usually does that well coming off any sort of long break. So that could be an issue. But I also felt there were a lot of tactical problems that mainly I think is down to neither the team or Zidane really understanding the 3-5-2 or 5-3-2, however you want to call it. And I think a really good example of that is the midfield structure, because Zidane did that, you know, thing where he plays Casemiro ahead of the two interiors, and that really just kind of messes up our whole progression from defense to offense, right? Because Casemiro, you know, whatever you think about him, is not the best link, you know, that we need to have an attack at midfield. It needs to be Modric and Isco, and Isco was coming so deep. He was the one receiving the ball from Sergio Ramos and Varane, and that was really disappointing to see, because Isco's best used in the final third. And, you know, why I say that Real Madrid don't understand how to play the 5-3-2 is because, if you know, that formation, its strength is attack on the wings. And if you look at how we attack through the wings, we had no passing triangles there. We just had the fullback, and we had the central midfielder, and the striker was never dropping over from central areas to help create that those passing triangles on the wing. And that's why I say that the players didn't really understand. So we didn't have any, you know, progression through the middle or out wide.
Right.
And that just really hurt us in the first half.
And it also feels a little bit like, you know, Madrid's wing play has been lacking ever since you know, the Bale injury, and in a formation that really relies on this kind of dynamic play up the wings. That, I mean, getting Gareth Bale, who's arguably the world's best winger, back will probably be helpful. So Paul, what do you make of this match, man? Do you feel like do you agree with Ohm that you feel like Casemiro pushing forward is kind of the mistake, and maybe dropping him back a little bit and allowing or encouraging players like Isco to kind of roam out wide to try to create, is that the right move, or do you think that in general we should just scrap the formation entirely and try to move it back towards a 4-4-2 or a 4-3?
I would scrap it altogether, because I don't think it was defensively even solid as we expected it to be. If you get look at the pass maps, Ramos was pushed way to the left, making a big hole in the center, which accidentally then was exploited by Sergio Leon for that conceded goal. And I think this formation, the three men at the back, is so hard to pull off, and this is not time to experiment. It's over the preseason. So I would just revert back to 4-3-3 or 4-4-2 and hope for Bale to get back.
Well, I think part of the issue, right, Ohm, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but part of the issue is that Zidane was almost forced into this formation out of necessity, right? Like, I mean, like, with the full roster, this isn't Zidane's this isn't Zidane's, you know, go-to move, right?
I mean, yeah, I think if he has Bale and everyone fit, it isn't his go-to move, but I'm not so sure he was forced into it. Maybe he felt that way, but the way I see the squad that we had to play Osasuna, I didn't think it was necessary, because we had Asensio and Lucas, and we had James, who had just come back, who can all play as that third attacker or play in midfield. I think the reason he experimented with this was to kind of prepare the team to play Napoli with this formation. I mean, I hope he doesn't go on with this, but I think that's what he was doing, because if you look at how Napoli play, they're probably the best at build up through the wing in all of Europe right now. I mean, that is their heavy focus, and the 3-5-2 is supposed to be defensively very solid on the wing, right? Because you have two center backs that can split wide.
Right.
You have wing backs that can, you know, drop in, and you have two CMs who can defend wide. So I think that's what he was trying to do. I didn't think he was necessarily doing it because he felt that he didn't have enough players to play three at the front or four in midfield, but I could be wrong.
That was my feeling as well. And the 3-5-2 or 5-3-2 has always felt like a system, a structure born out of necessity for Zidane. And I always thought, you know, and Paul, you know, correct me if you think I'm wrong, right? But I always felt like, you know, watching some of these matches, there were times when this team did manage, right, to pull off a passable version of this formation. I thought, you know, I know we talked about, right, we talked about this after the Sevilla game where Sevilla came back, but the truth is that game, Madrid looked pretty good with the 3-5-2 until the very end.
Yeah, it did, but still, I think it was unnecessary because we sacrificed way too much of our offense for unnecessary defense. We conceded like 30 meters in the middle of the pitch and then we bunked down. I don't think it was that necessary. And interestingly, in this match, I don't think Marcelo was particularly good. Even this in this free wing back left role, he didn't convince me. I think when we reverted back to four at the back, he was much better.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, the truth is that this is a roster that's not really built for a 3-5-2, right? Like, this is, right, especially right now with the Madrid wingbacks kind of suffering with, you know, Danilo obviously got quite, you know, quite injured in this match. And, you know, it just feels a little bit like Madrid need, like, this is the formation that requires and kind of puts emphasis on the physical nature of these powerful wingbacks, like Marcelo, who can just run all game. But the problem is that wingback is actually the one position that Madrid is kind of, it doesn't quite have the depth for. So it feels like we're putting a lot of strain in this formation on a position that we can't really afford to put so much strain on.
I mean, yeah, I think that's a fair point with Danilo going down and Colin Trouz, like, he doesn't exist. Like,
I mean, you can't play him. I mean, it's just a black hole.
Yeah, so, and Nacho, I have faith with Nacho at fullback. Like, he's very comfortable there. But wingback, you know, does he necessarily have the offensive capability at wingback? I'm not so sure about that. It's interesting. Like, it's mainly, I think the issue is, like, I think the way that everyone's looking at 3-5-2 is you can just have wingbacks and they'll do everything for you on the wings. And that's true to an extent when you have like people like Marcelo who are so good individually, but you need people to come to those areas and create connections.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think the team really understands that right now. And so if we were to do that, you know, maybe I'd be kind of okay with this versus Napoli, but right now I still think that would be too risky.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Napoli then. Let's assume that Bale remains sidelined and that this is kind of the roster composition that we have. What formation would you guys roll out? Paul, why don't you start?
I would go back to the classic 4-3-3, midfield Casemiro, Kroos, Modric, and then Lucas, Ronaldo, and Benzema up top.
Now, you don't get a little bit worried about Napoli's wingbacks or, you know, ability to attack down the wings? Like, they're a very fast team. I mean, I don't know.
Will, but I think that Lucas will be very crucial in this role, and that's why I would prefer him over James in this match particularly. Mm-hmm. And let's just pray that Dani Carvajal will be ready, because I think we will need his offensive output as well as defensive. If we have Nacho there, I'm not so sure that our right flank will function as good as we hope.
Do you feel that way?
I pretty much agree with what Andre's saying. I might go for a 4-4-2 because looking at the way we've recently kind of struggled to create chances for our forwards, I want to put Ronaldo as close to goal as possible because he kind of seems like our attacking player that seems to be coming back into form. And I just have this feeling like this is not really, you know, a logical kind of, you know, induction. It's more of like just this gut feeling that, you know, that match is going to be defined by how we finish our chances. And I just kind of want Benzema, because Benzema was kind of shat on, Osasuna match for missing that chance and stuff. Like, you know, I get that, like, he should have scored it, but I thought his connection with Ronaldo was quite good. You know, his assist for Ronaldo is the kind of passes that we need going to him. And I think having Ronaldo and Benzema combine up top, with Lucas being a wide midfielder and closer to the defense a little bit, would be really good for defending the wings and, you know, getting our strikers inside the box more.
I totally agree with that. So I was actually I was kind of leading that question into to my feeling, which is that we will play against Napoli, it feels to me that a 4-4-2 actually might be the move here. I'm trying to think a little bit, but it reminds me a little bit maybe of the match against Atletico, in that we need, you know, to kind of control the center, but also be prepared to defend strong on the wings. And that's exactly what Zidane did against that in Atleti, which is when he rolled out this 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1. Now, so let's kind of recenter on the Osasuna match, because I know that we're going to have another podcast to talk Napoli, and we have a billion questions about it. and we're going to deal with that later. So let's go back to Osasuna. Who do you guys felt like was your player of the match? I felt like Madrid came into this match a lot better in the second half. But before we jump into that, I actually wanted to, and I know this is kind of disjointed, I wanted to make a point to this. I actually thought Karim Benzema was getting the short stick again in this match. And I felt like, you know, yes, he was a little bit wasteful with his chances, but the pass to put Ronaldo through on goal after the first goal was an absolute work of brilliance, I thought. And there are not many other strikers in the world that can make that pass. Let's talk a little bit about this. Do you guys agree with me, or do you feel like I'm being a little bit too nice to one of my favorite players, Karim Benzema?
I totally agree with you, Gabe. Benzema was pretty good in the first half. It was a crucial part how to link Ronaldo with the midfield. And as usual, everybody will just look at that miss, which arguably he should have scored, but it was a very tough position.
Right.
He was a little bit behind, yeah, and Sirigu was very close to him. But still, one miss shouldn't overshadow his overall contribution to the match.
I mean, I pretty much agree with you guys. Like, I love Benzema, but I think the issue here is that why is Benzema, who I think undisputably has not been on top form the past, like, you know, for a big part of the season, why is he starting versus the worst team in the league when we have Morata on the bench? And he's done really well when called upon. So I think the issue is that when Benzema isn't playing at his best, why is he an undisputed starter? Like, I kind of disagree with a lot of, like, the vitriol that Benzema's getting, but I do think that Morata has deserved a lot of chances that he hasn't got.
So, yeah, I think that – so I wanted to follow up my question by basically talking about how, despite my love for Benzema and despite my feeling that he is one of the – like, he's this year's James or the year before's Bale, where he's the guy that everyone has decided that this is the cog in our machine that isn't functioning. Let's attack him. And just like the previous years, he's getting it and he's getting it to such a degree that, you know, that the hate has gone far too far on Karim Benzema, and people are just blind to the things that he does really well. That being said, I could not agree more with what you're – I mean, like, and this is annoying. Like, we should be fighting more in this podcast. We got to get Josh back on to fight with us. But I couldn't agree with me more, because right now – Zidane must basically feel that Benzema is the type of player who's got this kind of psyche issue, that he needs to have the full confidence, know he has the full confidence of the manager to play himself back into form. Mm-hmm. The problem is, against better teams, missing some of these opportunities and, you know, becoming sort of a black hole at times is actually a game-changing issue. And so I think that we absolutely, Madrid has a duty to start giving Morata more time, even if Morata is going to leave this summer in a deal for whomever. It's time to experiment and to, you know, and the time of Benzema being a absolutely uncontrovertible starter every single time he's healthy in whatever competition has to be over. Like, he's good and he should be, you know, given the preference when they're both on. But when he's struggling like this, I just feel like, you know, he's got, you know, Madrid, Zidane has a duty to the team to start giving Morata the opportunity. If he can do better, like, let him show it. But, you know, otherwise it's just going to be, he's going to pop in for 10 minutes at the end of the match, and sometimes he's going to score, and then the papers are just going to start talking about how he's the greatest player ever.
I mean, you predicted this, didn't you, at the beginning of the season, how, like, there would be this backing from Morata. I mean, not that it's undeserved, but, I mean, you really, like, hit the nail on the head. I think it was last season or at the beginning of this season.
Well, it's because anyone who's been, right, a follower of Real Madrid and someone, and anyone who knows the way the Spanish papers work, they have a dual agenda in some of these places, that what they really want is for Real Madrid to win every competition ever, but they want Real Madrid to do that with an essentially all Spanish lineup. So anytime you have a young Spanish wonder kid come in, whoever is ahead of him, even Zidane, right, when he played when I was a kid, Zidane, there were calls for Zidane to be benched in favor of whatever new Spanish kid was there. they will make this case, especially when the team is winning, because they're like, well, the team is winning, but this guy isn't playing as well. So you could make the team win even more if you brought in, like, this youth product guy. And you're like, or like, so when I was, you know, and the exact same thing happened, guys, when they brought in Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo, the Brazilian one. There were calls that entire season when he was racking up goal after goal, because all he does is score. He doesn't bring anything else to the table. It's like, motherfucker, that is such a big deal. He scores. Yeah. Like, there were calls all season to bench him. Well, why not bench him in favor of Javier Garcia Portillo? Why not? Like, Portillo needs to get his shot. It's like, no, he doesn't. He doesn't. Anyway, so that's exactly what I said about Morata coming in. Morata's a lot better than Portillo was, but and I do think he deserves a shot. But I just feel like this is their mentality. They want to have this guy start, so they're going to start some shit. And so every possible story about, oh, this guy's going to leave because he's unhappy,
yeah.
They're going to run that story right away, right? And it's never going to be checked. It's never going to be worried about. Anyway. Yep. So when we come back, we're going to answer your questions, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the Osasuna match. You're listening to the Managing Madrid podcast on managingmadrid.com. Hello and welcome back to the Managing Madrid podcast on managingmadrid.com. This is your host, Gabe Lesger, here on the mic. I'm joined by Om Arvind and Andra Paul, and we are talking Real Madrid Osasuna and Real Madrid sort of generally. We're going to answer your questions now. And generally, just remember, if you want your questions answered first, you can always go and donate, make a small donation to this show on Managing Madrid or Patreon, patreon.com/Managing Madrid. We're going to read your show, your question every single time, guaranteed. We'll answer it, and we'll if you know, depending on how much money you donate, you'll get other perks and whatnot. So, jumping right into the question again, that's managingmadrid.com/Patreon or patreon.com/managingmadrid. Sorry, guys. And become a sponsor. All right, so here's one of our patrons. Thomas Berg asks us, tired of talking about formations? How about the nostalgic angle? What is the best formation seen for Real Madrid? When and why? What players made it perfect? Oh, my God. Well, I know this is an impossibly hard question to kind of answer off the top of your head, so we should have prepared a little bit more for this kind of question. It's a great question, Thomas. And thank you again for your donation. Do you have any, and how about this? Instead of this, Thomas, I think that what we should do is think a little bit about what your favorite players are playing for Real Madrid historically and now, and why they worked so well in the positions they worked in.
Wait, what? Where's this question?
This is on our Facebook, dude.
All right, I'm not seeing this. Someone else answer, and then I'll answer.
So I asked people to ask on Facebook. I asked people to give us questions, but here's what I'd say, Thomas. Instead of talking about formations, I'm going to give you some players within a formation. So I think, for example, historically speaking, there are two players that I wanted to talk about. The first one is Claude Makélélé, who is arguably the person who reinvented and redefined the all around. Defensive midfielder, and he was such an engine of Madrid's game, playing at that defensive midfielder position that he kind of pioneered with this in the Del Bosque kind of double pivot. He was wonderful, And I think that as part of the Del Bosque, I think he was rolling out a 4-2-3-1 with a double pivot for much of that period of time. That for me was a crucial player and a crucial position historically that I don't think we've had quite in the same level of just importance to the whole squad, that when you remove it, the entire squad falls apart. The second person I want to talk about is, in fact, our man, Zinedine Zidane. And Zidane, what he was able to do is play as a traditional center midfielder, but also play as a center attacking midfielder, moving all around the pitch for Madrid and creating. So even in those years after Marco Lele, when Madrid was really struggling, there was this spark of brilliance because of Zidane, who was, I think, you know, most people would agree, was the best player in the world for such a long time. And just having him on the pitch was enough to allow Madrid just that spark of brilliance. And, you know, he was never quite used the right way after Madrid lost Del Bosque. But Del Bosque and Zidane in those first 2 years, it was magic watching him play. So I don't know, Ondra, do you have any thoughts on, like, historically, like, you know, nostalgically, what the best position with the best player at each position was, that kind of idea?
Well, you talk about Makalele, I'd raise you Fernando Redondo. I think
that's a great point.
Even better than Makalele, I think more aesthetically pleasing than him. And he was such a dominant force in the center of the pitch defensively, and then his long dribbling runs. Mm-hmm. And of course, that magical trick at Old Trafford, you can't forget that.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's a really good point.
I think the single best piece I've ever seen a Real Madrid player to do. Even better than Zidane's volley. Yeah.
Ha! Wow, really?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. The Zidane volley is I think, the single best piece of football I've ever seen in my life, simply because of the... It was in the Champions League final.
Yeah,
the Champions
League final makes it the best, but... Yeah.
All right. Well, have you thought a little bit about this question?
Yeah, it's... I mean, in terms of, like, who's the best for positions, like, this isn't going that far back, but you talked about an attacking midfielder. I think the best pure attacking midfielder of all time is Ozil. And
wow, really?
When it comes to pure chance creation, I don't think there's been anyone better in the history of football, whether it's through balls, crosses, cutbacks, like reverse passes. Him at the center of that Mourinho team was just brilliant. Like, I kind of saw football in a whole new way when I watched Ozil control a game. It was just that guy is just, like, incredible. And it's kind of sad, in my opinion, that he's being wasted at Arsenal. You know, I think he deserves a better team that's going to challenge for titles, you know, every single season. But that guy could just, you know, him combining with Ronaldo is still, like, the greatest sight I've seen in football. It was just incredible. That guy just plays football on another wavelength.
So I agree. When he's on, he is there's nothing wrong with what you're saying. My issue is that I felt like Ozil, while I did like him a lot, I felt like he had two things. First of all, I felt like at minute 65, 70, I had to move him off because he was tired. Second of all, I felt like when he was off, and he would go through these games where he would disappear and he just kind of wouldn't see him. And maybe that was because the whole team was off, but I don't know. I feel like someone who gets to the point of this is the best, you know, player at a position. I don't know. I feel like Modric, for example, you rarely, if ever, see him in a game where he disappears and he isn't around, if that makes sense. But that's a great answer, dude. I did not expect it at all. So that's great. I don't know if you saw any more patrons, Owen, when you were reading through these questions.
I didn't see anyone that tagged themselves as a patron.
Okay, so please, if you're a patron, we love you and thank you so much, but please, please, please tag yourself like Thomas Berg did here, that you're a patron, so that we can answer your question. We know you can answer your question because that's why you donated, other than you wanted to support us. So here we go. Yash Vaidya asks us, with Modric and Kroos back, does Kovacic return to the bench even after his brilliant performances? Paul, do you feel like Kovacic deserves to go back to the bench?
No, he definitely doesn't. And that was my issue right before the Osasuna game. I think that the players need consistency. And if you have Kovacic, who had a brilliant game, he was, for me, the man of the match. And then the next game you bench him, what message does it send to him? Like, I don't care. He can say to himself, I don't care how much I will play or how well I will play because I know that the next game I'm going to go to bench. I think that's very, not very motivating for him.
Yep. I agree. I actually think that he should be the go-to starter between those two guys. He just is a brilliant player, and I actually think he brings a lot to the table defensively that people don't talk about. Where are you on this?
I mean, I think practically, yeah. I mean, if he's asking whether he will go to the bench, I think that's, like, undoubted. Zidane's midfield is Casemiro, Modric, Kroos. In a lot of games now, I want to see Kovacic. Like, I'm still kind of, like, in some games, like, against Napoli and, you know, against bigger teams where we need a lot of defense, I prefer Casemiro. But every single game I see Kovacic play, I get more and more convinced that, you know, he's just this – you know, near complete package that has such a high ceiling. And I just want to give him as much game time as possible because this dude is going to grow into an incredible footballer. I mean, he's already, a really good footballer. But he's
21. And, like, I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm about to do the same thing, man. Every time we talk about this, I want to rant about how great this guy is. He is such an exciting person to watch. And if you just look at the year-over-year progression, he's beginning to see the field in such an incredible way. The ceiling is so high, that of all the players on this pitch right now, I think that he is the one most likely to be challenging for the golden ball in 5 years. It's unbelievable watching this kid play.
I mean, yeah, I was pretty much going to say the same thing. I was going to say this guy easily has the potential to become a top three central midfielder in 3 to 4 years. I mean, I think when we talk about Kovacic, we talk about his positives and flaws. We all forget how incredibly young he is. For some reason, it feels like he's been around forever. And I think that's just a sign of potential greatness. And, you know, bar any injuries and bar, like, a lack of playing time, I think this kid is destined for greatness.
So here's another question that I think is pretty interesting. It's pretty long, but let's bear with me. Shobit Mehta asks us, so what exactly is the point of having Asensio, Morata, and Mariano if they're hardly ever going to play? Squad death is a joke if we barely utilize it. Also, does Zidane have a game plan other than crossing? He brought on James and made him play the left flank and Isco on the right. And that not a strong indication of his intent to continue crossing? Or am I missing something? Wow, lots to unpack there. Paul or Ohm, why don't you talk a little bit to me about the crossing question, and then Paul, why don't you talk, think about it a little bit while Ohm's talking about the squad depth issue.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, I think that's a fair point, like, about the crossing. It puzzles me, how obsessed Zidane is with kind of playing wingers, you know, with their stronger foot near to the touchline. You know, he does that with Lucas. He's pushed James out to the left a lot. Isco's gone to the right a lot, especially in a 4-4-2. And I just feel like Zidane really values width, and he values this kind of he values crosses a lot. And I think that's because Zidane has slowly been turning into a more pragmatic coach, and that he sees a lot of value in being strong defensively and releasing players down the wings and having players combine with fullbacks. And looking at the statistics at how good we are in the air, it makes sense, like, to cross, a lot. Like, but at times, we really do it too much, because it's been proven time and time again that crosses are one of the most inefficient ways to create chances. And I think putting someone like James with his stronger foot, farther away from the touchline, so putting him on the right wing, he's just going to start playing through balls, right? Like once James switched to the right, when Lucas came on, Isco became our central attacking midfielder. He was just playing beautiful pass to Ronaldo. And I just think that Zidane at this moment has this mentality where I think he's over-reliant on width and over-reliant on crosses in his system.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting, though, because, of course, Benzema's Ronaldo's first goal was not through a cross. It was a straight down the middle, brilliant through ball from Benzema. And the second goal, actually, was Benzema receiving the ball, dribbling a little bit too long in the area, getting dispossessed, and Isco pouncing on it. And the third goal was a through ball that Ronaldo brilliantly left off for Lucas Vazquez on the ground. So obviously we have a problem with crossing, but I have less of an issue with it when it's more part of a balanced attack that makes the players, like, so if you cross a lot, people might start shading out to cover the crosses. And that's when you have to be prepared to bring the ball back in and keep the defenders honest. And I felt like it wasn't a perfect game, but there was a lot to like about parts of it, including that, you know, I thought that there were parts of the game where Madrid did keep Osasuna honest in that respect. So, Paul, did you get to think a little bit about the squad depth issue?
Yeah, I did. And I don't think it's much of an issue as our friend of the show is thinking, because we have to think about it. We're challenging for 4 trophies this season. It was the UCL, La Liga, Copa, and Club World Cup. And to challenge on all 4 fronts, you need basically a super squad, because injuries will happen, and they did happen, as we saw.
As we saw, right? Like, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm actually looking at the minutes played by each player, and they are quite well distributed. Almost everyone, bar Pepe, is over 1,000 minutes, and Mariano also, because he's our third forward, and it was more of an insurance policy. I don't think he was at any point being considered as a more regular player.
In fact, a lot of people wanted him to be sent out on loan, and he personally made the decision not to. It's an interesting call, because with Mariano, right? Because actually, I felt that Mariano, he has upside and he can continue to grow. But I don't see him as having the upside to ever be a consistent Real Madrid starter. Maybe the upside to be a consistent Real Madrid third option off the bench, or like a kind of change of pace option. So I actually didn't hate that Madrid didn't send him out, simply because, yeah, why not have him in to be a change of pace option at the end of a match this season? Maybe it's just that I'm being a little bit short-sighted. What do you think?
I think a lot of people who, because there was this ridiculous thing like a couple months ago where people were calling for Mariano to start over Benzema. I think a lot of people saying that haven't really watched him while he was at Castilla, and I could be wrong, but nearly every expert I talked to, and from my own analysis of Mariano, is that, yeah, he's quite a good striker. Physically, he's extremely impressive, well-developed, but he is a limited forward. He's a poacher, and he's out there to bully defenders physically, but he's not going to create anything for anyone else. He's not going to be dribbling past a lot of players. He's just in there to, you know, be a simple poacher, and that's fine, but for Real Madrid, that's not necessarily good enough. And I would agree with you that we should have kept Mariano at the beginning of the season. But seeing how Zidane rarely rotates like his strike force when Benzema is there, I think it's kind of a waste, because I do think he has like more potential. I don't think it's like sky high. But if we're not going to use Mariano at all, and we're not even going to use Morata
Yeah. All right, so one or two last questions, gentlemen, then we'll wrap it, because I gotta get myself moving. We're on Twitter as well. We've asked this. So Isco Alarcón fanboy at Ryan07. We know Ryan, friend of the show, asks us, and I wonder if, Ryan, if your handle isn't giving away your feeling on this, who has been the most underrated player this season for Real Madrid and why?
I need to think on this for.
All right. Paul, any thought?
Underrated as if now or at the beginning of the season?
Overall, this whole so far this season, who has been the most underrated player?
I'm thinking Asensio or Kovacic. And Kovacic, I would have to consider him as at the beginning of the season as underrated, mm-hmm. because nobody expected him to step up as he did
right.
with those minutes. And Asensio.
Now.
Maybe, yeah, Asensio now. Mm-hmm. Even though he doesn't assist as much as we expected him, mm-hmm. but he's very direct. He can drive on the left flank, and if Zidane doesn't use him as a left wing back as he did against Sevilla, he's a very potent goal scorer. Yeah, so I would say him.
All right, what do you think?
I mean, personally, I don't think anyone's been, you know, really underrated, but I have to say kind of Lucas, because I feel like this fan base was really enamored with him last season, and for some reason, it's just... just people just don't like him as much. We just look at him as more disposable. And like, I mean, I kind of get it. Like, he's not, in my opinion, an indisputable starter over James or Asensio. But it's just like, seemingly we've just started to ignore. Like, I've seen a lot of comments like Lucas, you know, having Lucas at, you know, right wing means we lose so much offense. I mean, this still creates a lot of offense. He's one of the best dribblers on this squad. He's a good crosser, and he's very direct, and I like what he provides, and he's still, you know, the best two-way player, you know, next to Kovacic in this squad. So I don't think there's been enough appreciation, because if you all look at his stats and you look at what he's actually contributed, like his crucial goal, you know, killer goal versus Osasuna, I think he's contributed a lot this season, equal to what he contributed last season.
So my answer, guys, and it's funny because of what I made, the joke I made earlier, but I actually think Isco has been brutally underrated. If you actually, like, I think if you take some time to consider what he brings to the squad almost every time he comes out, and so you were mentioning two-way player. Well, Isco, I thought, has been incredibly strong in his commitment to the squad, to run both directions. And he was, you know, obviously Ronaldo, but, like, Isco was the brains and the motor behind some of Madrid's most impressive wins so far this season, including right against Atletico Madrid, which I think that we can all agree was the most impressive win of the season. That I think we can chat. Obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo was incredible, but Isco was the motor of that, that engine that ended up with that match. So for my money, actually, I actually think that people still are underrating Isco. And I think that we forget how impressive and important Isco can be in that 4-4-2 or the 4-3-3, where he is that center motor. So, I mean, obviously at the beginning of the season, the answer is Kovacic, simply because, you know, neither Om nor I, we would have talked about Kovacic as in the kind of glowing terms we do now. But, you know, I think now he's properly rated, because I could not fucking rate that guy higher. I think he's incredible, and I can't wait to have, you know, he's not just the heir of Modric. I mean, I'm just going to quickly finish up my point on him. I actually see Kovacic as almost the heir to Andres Iniesta. Like, that's the level that I see him, man. I think he's just bananas and absolutely incredible. So I'm all in on Kovacic. And I admit to being fully fucking wrong on him too, guys, because I got to tell you, I was saying, well, maybe we loan out Kovacic this season. At the beginning of the season,
I told you, Gabe, we didn't need Pogba. I knew Kovacic was enough. I didn't know he was this good.
All right, well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on. We have tons more content coming up this week. Follow us. We're going to do a midweek show, either about, you know, talking more about the Champions League or talking about the youth squad. So tune in. Kian will be back then. And until later, you know, a la Madrid.
A la Madrid.